Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to Golf Talk Live. I'm your host, Ted Odorico, and I want to welcome you this evening, May 30th. This is our third episode of Golf Talk Live, and I'm very excited this evening. We've got a very special guest. This is actually my first guest, and I've been looking forward to having her on the show, Nicole Weller. And just to give you a little bit of the heads up on Nicole, just a little bit about her background. Nicole originally is from the Massachusetts area, where she started golf about the age of four with her dad. And she's just really built a great career, in my opinion. And as I was just talking to her before we came on live, I want to just kind of get a sense of what she's doing and bring her on the program, get her to talk a little bit about some of the things that she's been doing. And she's very well known in the golf community for working particularly with junior golfers. And I think, as I just had mentioned to her just a few moments ago, is a great place to start. So I'm going to talk a little bit briefly about her. But first, let me bring her on live here. Welcome to the show, Nicole.
Thank you so much, Ted, for having me on. I'm honored to be your first guest.
Well, as I said, I couldn't think of a better place to start than somebody who's working with particularly the junior golfers. And I'm going to let you obviously talk a little bit more about that as the show goes on. But just to let some of the listeners that maybe aren't familiar with who you are and that, just give them a little bit of an insight, how you got started. Obviously, I mentioned briefly that your dad got you into golf at about 4 years old, and that was pretty much the same start that I got. But just give them a little heads up on how you started your career.
Definitely. I started playing golf when my dad took the game up. I was four. We had moved on to in an area where the family built a house near the 10th hole of Heritage Hill Country Club. Really great course to play as a youngster. And from there, pretty much just got into junior golf through some of the leagues and eventually ended up playing some state tournaments and AJGA, USGA, Pub Links, which is not around much longer, so I was sad about that. But from there, ended up playing at Wake Forest on scholarship. I was fortunate to play under Diane Daly, and just had to make a decision after college if I wanted to, you know, go more academia or play golf. And I ended up going for my master's degree in sports psychology, which comes in handy in golf. So I was really excited to go that path. While I was in Knoxville at the University of Tennessee, I slipped into a position at Cherokee Country Club and found out that after becoming an assistant there, my time I was really much more outside than in the shop. And at that point, it taught me that my teaching career was really, really important. So worked at Fairways Greens Golf Center, became a LPGA, USGA Girls Golf Site Director there for our local chapter. And we grew our program from 15 to nearly 80 girls and just really had a ball. And I guess my time there really gave me a lot of opportunity to explore working with different youth activities and programs. And my husband, who's also a PGA member, we met at Level 2 in the GPTP, and he moved to Knoxville, and we eventually moved into the Lowcountry. We honeymooned at Kiowa Island and just fell in love with this area, and we're hoping for something in Charleston and Savannah. Ended up here in Savannah, and I can't believe it. We've been here just about 9 years. Like, time flies, and now I have the ability to direct the golf instruction program, and my husband's the head golf professional at one of our four courses, and here we are. It's just a wonderful, wonderful story up to now. So, and hopefully more to continue.
Now, your husband's name is Ty.
His name's Ty, yes.
And you met him how long ago?
We've been married about 13 years now. So I met him about 14, 15 years ago at that was when the GPTP was kind of traveling around the country. So we met at the Level 2 testing site in Columbus, Ohio. And he's from Kansas, so he had traveled in from Kansas, and I came in from Knoxville. And he almost didn't end up going to that, you know, that testing site. So it's just funny how life works out.
Well, it's certainly fate, that's for sure. And I certainly would love to have him on a future program. Maybe we'll get the two of you to come on together. And if I had a thought about it ahead of time, I would have had him on as well. And I'm sure hopefully he's listening to us this evening.
I hope so.
but just to let the listeners know just some of the things I was reading through. Obviously, I got a lot of this information off of your website, which, by the way, is NicoleWeller.com. Anybody that wants to go and check out a little bit about Nicole. But you're obviously a head teaching professional at the Lannings Club in Savannah, Georgia, which is a great area. I've been to Savannah a few times and definitely a great area to work. You're on the PGA of America. You're on an advisory board. Is that correct?
Yes, I ended up being selected and asked to serve on the PGA Youth. We're now calling it the Youth Golf Development Player. Okay. It used to be Junior Golf, but we're switching to Youth Golf. But yes, and really excited to be on that committee for a year or two here. So that's been awesome. Alan Ranowski, Dottie Pepper, Brendan Elliott, a lot of great names, Rick Murphy, and a lot of excitement going on with programs and activities and ideas as we try to help grow the game.
Now, you're also on the Snag Golf Advisory Board, the Girls Golf of Savannah Board, the PGA, which you mentioned, the Junior National Golf Committee, the Georgia Junior Golf Committee, and the Proponent Golf Group Golf. So you've got quite a few things in your resume. Now, this I'm not as familiar with, but you're also a partner with both the Little Linksters and the Littlest Golfer. You're a staff ambassador with the Littlest Golfer. Tell me a little bit about that.
You know, I think the three of us, and on the side, I have I wrote a book called Stick to Sports, Let's Play Golf, and it's for ages 4 to 8+, a really, really neat sticker and point reward books for youth wanting to learn golf. And so as I get into the industry, I find that Brendan Elliott's doing so much with Little Linksters in his program, and he really targets ages 3 through 8. I find myself now working a lot with ages 2 through 6, which I absolutely love. But the Littlest Golfer has clubs that I came across. These clubs, they are so wonderful for what I do with our youngsters. They really target like ages 1 through 4-ish, 1 through 5, depending on height. They're so lightweight. They have molded grips. And so the three of us have really come across a lot of activities that we find we can work together, and we're just kind of partnering up, and Chris has us on the advisory staff there as ambassadors, and it's just been a really a joy to work with two companies like that who are so passionate about the youngsters and gaining you know, gaining the attraction, getting their attraction into the game. So, you know, there are so many wonderful instructors like Henry Brunton and Don Law, and they have such nice programs, a lot of them getting kids going into college, but we want to also get the kids first attracted into the game. So, you know, us targeting ages 2, 3, 4, 5, that to us is our niche. So
and that's, I think it's important as somebody that's teaching the game, you want to get them early on. Obviously they're going to be involved in other sports and things like that as they, they start to develop, but you want to obviously get them in that early age and kind of get them hooked on golf. And you know, as I was much like you, my father took me out when I was at knee high to a grasshopper. And I'm 6'4". That's why I say that.
I love that phrase. It's so fun.
This kind of shows my age as well. but anyways, you know, so I started at a very early age as well, and just fell in love with the game. And kind of a very quick thing, and I'll get off of myself in a minute. But my sister, who's a few years older than I am, for the longest time just could not understand the game. Just didn't see what the purpose was in that. And I finally actually got upset at her one day, and I said, look, I was watching a tournament, how it started. I think it was actually the U.S. Open. And I said, look, I said, have you ever played? And she said, no. I said, have you ever been to a driving range? I said, no. I said, well, then don't criticize until you've tried it. Well, to this day, she's now hooked on the game. She plays in a league. She works for a large bank, and of course they have corporate outings and stuff. She plays all the time, has her own clubs, own shoes, belongs to, you know, a club back home. And, you know, this sort of went from somebody that started later in life but just didn't really try the game. So if we can get these little ones out, like you said, starting them at a very early age and introducing them, some of the older ones, I know it's a little bit tougher later in life. They don't want to get into it. I mean, it doesn't mean you shouldn't try, but I think it's a great niche to have, and I agree with you. I think that's where we need to start and really grow the game to keep it going. Now, I had a question because I did, as I said, I read that you're starting with really, really young. How do you get them? How do you get the, especially at the 2, you know, 5, 6, I can understand, but at a 2-year-old, how do you keep their attention?
Well, I think, you know, the interesting thing about the youngsters is that I don't expect much attention from them at all, and I expect them to engage and disengage throughout the session. So with a 2- and a 3-year-old class, sometimes we'll have up to 8 to 10 children in the class, and at that age, right. I want one adult there per junior, and we're youth,
right.
Now golfers, we're calling them now. I'm trying to switch over to the terminology, but one adult there per person, and really, it's just a lot of different activities. It could be, you know, we'll start and we'll just introduce and I'll get down on my knees. Especially with the younger kids, you want to get down to their level. And if you're talking down to them, they won't be as engaged in the program. So, you know, a lot of them are shy.
Right. They don't want to feel intimidated.
Oh, gosh, no. And, I mean, if you have somebody talking down to you, it's kind of it is intimidating. So, especially with the youngsters, a really big key is to get down at their level, you know, play with them, get down and chat with them. So I usually, you know, get down their level. We chat a little bit. The parents are standing right behind them. Some are shy. Some hang on to mom and dad's leg. But, you know, we have them out there. They're out in the golf environment. We'll go over and I'll show them a little bit about how to do some putting or rolling, as we use that term in snag, and we'll use the littlest golfer clubs. We'll have them in the snag hoops and just a lot of colorful activities. And most of the time they're picking up the activities I have and moving them around, which is expected. They'll get into some little TikTok swings. The parents will help them. After about 8 minutes, if that, they're ready to do something else. So we go over and we do some snag snappers, which are the clubs with the little ribbon hanging off the end. And we'll do some big swings there. We'll use some of my rhymes, 1, 2, show your shoe, and the parents will help them a little bit with that. We practice throwing. I try to mix in a lot of movement and, you know, just some athletic movement and whatnot, because we want to develop athletes and not just a golfer, but it's fun for them to throw.
Right.
And they're getting, you know, their hand-eye coordination. Again, another 8 to 10 minutes of that, we all pick up golf balls. They're very good helpers at cleaning up. We make sure we have a potty break built in, because that's important
that
age group.
Of course.
And then we go up to the 18th hole, when there's usually nobody out there at that time for our class that I try to schedule. And we go out, and they love helping me take the flag in and out. They're so curious about the hole. Mm-hmm. We go to the edge of the bunker. They watch me rake, and we pat the sand. And we talk about boo-boos on the green, which are ball marks, and they love watching me fix it and then tap down. But there's so much to do. We come back and each one of them gets a medal, which they love, and it may be a little treat to take. I love using Brendan Elliott's Little Linksters coloring books. Those are awesome. So we have coloring books, and I may give them a little foam practice ball or something. Obviously not that they're going to eat, but no candy or food at that age. I don't want them to choke on it, and a lot of kids are allergic, so we don't go there with candy. But something that they can remember. If it's golf, it's even better related. So they're out there. They're out and getting exposed to the game. And one dad said when he had his child, and he was about 2 months shy of being age 2. He was a year and 10 months. And he loved the class. He said all he does is walk around the house with his littlest golfer putter. So, and he just loved it. And we still have him in class 2 years later. So,
wow. Now, generally speaking, how long would one of these sessions last at that age? I mean, how long do you feel is sufficient? Because you don't want to go too long. Otherwise, you know, again, you run into a myriad of problems. But when you're teaching, especially at that age, at the youngest of that group, generally, how long is the sessions?
I think that's a good question. With our group session for our Easter and our Thanksgiving and Christmas camps, the weather is usually a little bit better here. It's not so sweltering. So those classes, I'll block an hour off. And by the time you get them together and move them from one station to another, it ends up being about an hour. But you have 5 to 8 minute spurts of activities, which are perfect. If I do a private lesson for a 2- to 3-year-old, a half hour max, sometimes we may get 15 minutes out of it. And, you know, I tell the parents, I'm going to expect your child to engage and disengage, and he may become fixated on one little activity and we'll just stay on it. Or we may have to do something every 2 or 3 minutes. So definitely no more than a half hour, but you'll be surprised. Some of them want to go more. It's really amazing. You just have to figure out what their attention span's like and go with it.
Now, do you get, and I'm sure if you don't, I'd be very surprised, but do you get occasions where you might get a little crankiness on the part of the youngster?
Definitely.
And how do you, you know, I guess you just try to find something to sort of get them to reengage. Is that the idea?
Yeah, definitely. You know, and if they're in town, like let's say it's a guest and for some reason it's not the right time, you have to also work around nap time. So it's just something that you have to chat with parents and grandparents about when they are best. So you try to get them during their best times. That's why I like to have a parent on hand during the class, because if it's one-on-one, I can easily change activities. You know, I try to make things very animated, so if we switch gears, and that usually attracts their attention if we do something else. But they'll pretty much let you know I'm done with this. But with the big group, or with having one parent or grandparent there, then they can take them off, and if he wants to just squat by the hole and put the ball in and out of the hole, that's fine. So I think having somebody there to help is important. And, you know, with groups, definitely having 1 to 2 volunteers to help with meltdowns and bathroom breaks and, you know, just issues. So.
Yeah, and obviously that's going to happen. I think it doesn't matter what you do. I mean, you have to be prepared for that. Now, when do you start to really – now, obviously, at that age, you're very limited in what you can do with the youngsters. But what age do you really start to get them more involved in actually understanding? I mean, obviously, you're not going to start with the fundamentals with a 2-year-old, and you're certainly probably not going to do too much even beyond that. What age do you feel, based on your experience, is a good place to really start teaching them sort of the fundamentals of golf?
I would start as young as 2, if I could, meaning I do start with the fundamentals, but if for some reason they like holding the club a different way, a lot of the 2- and 3-year-olds will hold the club. I'm trying to think how to describe it. Like if you're holding a broom, left hand on top, right hand on the bottom, and like they'll sweep it like a broom, you know, and every couple of swings I will encourage them. I'll go, where are those thummies? You know, and we'll talk about our thumbs, and I can't see your thumbs, and sometimes they'll put them back on, but they'll go back. So I will start them as soon as I can, you know, based on stands. It's very easy to take a 2- or 3-year-old if they let you hold on to them. You know, usually I said, is it okay if I can help you? And if not, that's okay. Some of them don't want to be even moved or whatnot. So, but I'll pick them up, and when I plant them down, their feet are perfectly in the stance. And we'll talk about putting it under each shoulder. So we talk about body parts, and they learn about their body, shoulders, and feet. Mm-hmm. And we do a lot of things with colors. But I'll start them very early. You know, we'll do 1-2, show your shoe. And even at that point, you're talking about weight shift. They don't know it, but they have a good time with it.
Right.
So I'll start them as I can at age 2 to 3. And then, you know, 4, 5, 6, we try to really start getting into that more and do little prizes if they can do it. I do something called Tag Teach. And Teresa McKeon turned me on to that. It's awesome. And they use it in gymnastics a lot and it's in a lot of different areas. But it's just like a little Halloween clicker. Remember those little clickers?
Mm-hmm.
So basically, when somebody gets what you want them to do, it's just a reinforcing noise. And when they hear that, they know they're doing it the right way. So it's based on operant conditioning, and our young kids love using it. So if they can tag me when I show off my shoe, I know that they know what to look for. And then they're also involved in teaching their buddy, their partner, as opposed to just sitting around in a hoop, which they get bored and antsy. So
yeah, exactly. Now, obviously, you're going to run into, as you're getting into the, now, you know, primarily you're dealing right now with 2 to 6 years old, but you do obviously teach at the older level as well.
Oh, very much so. I have a lot of lessons where our members' grandchildren will come in, especially around Easter and spring break, and then some fall break and holidays. So I work quite a lot with ages, I would say 7 to 17 as well. But heavily, I would say ages probably 2 to 12 or 13. And I still like working a lot with the youth who are, you know, really getting out there, getting more competitive. I probably have about 8 to 10 youngsters who are middle school, high schoolers, and we're talking about college and, you know, working with the ping guide and tournaments and what levels they need to be. And I actually came up with a menu for students this year because I kind of got tired of writing down which ones were important. So I made a huge menu, and if it's local or regional or national or college-bound, I just check off what I want them to look at. So I have that for the older students as well.
Now, what do you do in a situation, Nicole, as an example? Let's say you get somebody that's a little bit older, even in middle school, let's say, and their parent, you know, introduces you and says, okay, you know, my kid's the next Tiger Woods or what have you, and you've had a chance to watch what they're doing that, and they just don't have it, but yet they're, you know, their parent, you know where I'm going with this, their parents are just, you know, I'm sure they're going to make it out in the tour one day. How do you handle something like that? Because you don't want to really, you know, sort of tick off the parent and say, well, you know, your kid's really not that good. But at the same time, you want to be able to maybe work with them and improve their game, but you want to be realistic. How do you approach that?
I think that's a great question. I think you have to be honest, tactfully honest, and, you know, say, here are some of the skills I would like to see a youngster be able to do to get to the next level. U.S. Kids Golf has the 3-level books that are awesome to use, and I'll say, you know, we really need to be able to do this before we move on. And I said, I can pass him, but if he can't do it, it's going to be harder, or, you know, if she can't do it, it's going to be harder at that level. They'll experience failure, and then I think we're going to see a spiral down. So I want them to experience success. You know, they have to trust in me, you know, what I think would be, you know, recommended as best to progress. So I think you have to be honest up front and kind of explain, here's, you know, kind of how it works out. And, you know, you just have to kind of go step by step and see how they're developing and just say, I'll tell you what I think's happening at this session. And, you know, if we need to spend more time here. And that's always a good question on how to handle that.
Well, I just think that, you know, especially, and the reason why I mentioned with Tiger is obviously, you know, he started at a very early age, I believe 3, when he first was picking up a club. And, you know, that's not going to happen with everybody. I mean, that's just, I don't want to say a fluke, but that's just not a common occurrence that you're going to have a child that's going to grow up and become to the level that he is. And I just think that, you know, as much as you want to encourage your child to you know, pursue whatever dreams and avenues that they have, you have to also be realistic, and you don't want to get in a situation where your parents coming into your facility thinking that, you know, their child is just going to rise to this level and it's just not there. But at the same time, you don't want to be discouraging. And like you said, you want to be tactful.
Right. And I think, you know, as you go through, and this, I think this happens also to people who may have an early retirement and think they want to go onto the tour. I've seen it in different places. And, you know, they're like, oh, I'm ready to play and I want to practice all the time and get out there and I want to play. And they don't understand the levels to go through. So even with an adult working, you know, a parent having a youngster they want to go through, I would explain the stages, and we want to experience, you know, some success locally. You don't just go right to the, you know, the USGA National Championship, because you probably will have a hard time qualifying. So I think working in levels, working with assessments, you know, having like a report card to see how they do, and saying, you know, there are different levels of play. We'll just have to see how, you know, your youngster develops with this. And, you know, I chat and I say, we have to see, you know, how what the youngster wants to do as well. You know, does your child, A, want to, is this your dream? Is this their dream? You know, because the child will probably be, an adult will also be as good as they practice, as the amount of time that gets put in, as you know, that's a chance of how good they're going to get. So if they don't want to practice a lot or don't practice a lot, there's a chance they're probably not going to be as good as they want to be.
Well, no, and that's the key. I mean, it's like your weekend warrior, as they call it. You know, you see a lot of them go out and they'll spend a few minutes on the range. They'll go out and they'll play, and you know, there may be a 20 or 25 handicap. And they don't understand why they're not improving, but they don't spend the time really working on their game. And what they often end up doing, at least what I've seen, and I'm sure you've probably witnessed this yourself, is they'll get out in the golf course and, you know, maybe what they're working with that day is a slice.
Right.
And they'll try and make adjustments while they're out there in the golf course. And that's really the worst place to do it. You need to do that on the range, and you need to do that with really another set of eyes, obviously a teaching professional to guide you. But this is what I've seen a lot, is people will get out there in the golf course, and I think that's what really adds to a lot of slow play.
Mm-hmm. No, I would agree. I'll go ahead. Sorry.
All I was just going to add is I just think that, you know, really they just need to understand that that's the sort of thing you do while you're on the practice range, not while you're out in the golf course. And what do you do when you're teaching one of your students, and I'm obviously talking about the older ones, what sort of a regimen do you put them through? Like, what do you suggest they do, and how much time do you recommend that they spend working on certain fundamentals that you've helped them with?
I think that's a good question. I work a lot with Rick Jensen's ideas on how a person learns, you know, the learning curve, so to speak. I don't think people understand the steps of motor learning because they haven't had a background in that or whatnot. But I try to educate a person on the four levels. You know, you have to understand what's going on. Do you know how to make a golf ball go up in the air? Do you know how to make it curve left and right? Do you know why it's curving left and right when you don't want it to? So understanding that's the first step. You know, from there they have to practice under some supervision, and they have to be able to, be able to do that out on the course. And, but I'd say mostly you want to develop it at the range first. So, you know, you want to be able to understand it. You want to be able to practice it under supervision, whether it's with feedback when I'm not there, or, you know, with a coach during a practice session. I have a lot of practice sessions that I offer now. I do 3 a week, and those are very busy. So we have people coming into practice because tour players have practice coaches. You know, I think the amateurs need them very much so as well. You know, third stage is being able to transfer those ideas at the range. So I'll tell them, all right, here, chip 10 balls. Tell me if you know how to do this shot. If they can do it, then I want them to do it from different positions. I'll watch. I'll make sure that they're doing it the right way. Or they'll have a training aid there that tells them they're doing it the right way. And then we transfer it. We say, all right, let's see if you can do this. When we set up a little course around the short game area, doing it as a par two, and I want to see what your score is while you practice and work on this shot. So we'll see if it transfers into the play mode. And then I want to see if you can take it to the course. So, you know, there are stages to do this, so I want to set them up at each stage and kind of give them some benchmarks for that. Most people go straight from level 1 to level 4. They don't do the supervised. They don't transfer the practice, and they certainly don't practice it under pressure. So I'm like, well, how do you know if it's going to hold up on the course under pressure if you don't practice it here? So we do a lot of pressure work. Well, I'll play against them. We'll put something on the line. You know, one of their favorite treats is either gone for the week or they earn it back. You know, we have people practice in front of each other in a team event, which is uncomfortable for some, but it happens on the course. So if they can do it under those circumstances, then I know they have a better chance at doing it on the course. So I need them to practice well, and that's really where a lot of my time is spent now. It's less on raw teaching, and it's more on coaching.
Right, exactly. How do you feel about, because I think every teaching professional is different, and you've probably seen this as well if you've gone through some of the groups and that. I'm obviously referring to the golf groups, but in Facebook, and you hear a lot of people saying, well, you know, I swear by TrackMan, or, I sort of teach the old methods. Where are your thoughts on the technology as far as teaching goes? I mean, are you a big proponent of that sort of teaching? I mean, obviously there's different styles in that, but do you use a lot of the equipment yourself, or you tend to do more of a hands-on or maybe a little mixture of both?
Well, I think it's probably a mixture of both. I do like technology. I don't have a TrackMan or a FlightScope. We are hoping to maybe, you know, talk to the club about the learning facility. So at some point we're hoping to see if we can do something with technology, but we'll see what happens. And I don't have the access to, like, a launch monitor. I would like to. I think it'd be nice to have that so I could learn how to teach better. But the people who are teaching with it are doing some incredible things. I use different type of equipment. Like, I love using HeartMath. I love using Tour Tempo. And I'm known as the gadget lady. It takes me about 20 minutes to set up my teaching tee in the back. I bring out all my stuff. I love iLine golf stuff. I love making up my own training aid. So I do like feedback. Technology, I think, is great, as well as it's used. Let me put it that way. So with video, it can be very detrimental to people. They look for, they see what they see, and they think that's the issue. They look at the symptoms and not the cause. So I think it can be dangerous if used incorrectly. Using TrackMan, using like a 3D system like, K-Vest or iClub or anything like that, you know, the numbers are great, but if it can be overwhelming. So if you know how to teach with it well, it can be extremely, extremely good tools.
Well, I think also too, Nicole, I think you have to sort of put people in different categories. You're going to get somebody that's going to come to you and they're into all the numbers. They want to know, you know, their club head speed. They want to know all these different things. And to have these tools available is a great thing. But then you have a lot of your other players that maybe are more a field player. They don't really care about the numbers. They just want to get results. And so that's where a good – and I agree with you. I think it's sort of a balancing act. I think the technology is great. I think video is is a great tool to have. I think it's nice to be able to show people, because for me, as an example, I'm a visual person. Now, I also can play by feel, but I'm primarily a visual person. So you can, you know, tell me until the wind stops what I'm doing wrong, and I'll have a more difficult time, you know, processing that than if you showed me what I'm doing wrong. And so you've got that different type of player out there that I think you can sort of incorporate a little of everything. But I see a lot on these groups, and as I said, on Facebook and some of the other social media, that just, you know, they swear by it. That's all they use, and they're not really receptive. And I think that's a dangerous thing as a teaching professional, to sort of stick to one thing. I think you have to be well-rounded. You have to understand what's available out there, but I think you have to be flexible as well.
Yeah, and I mean, there's some wonderful posts out there, people using the biomechanics and whatnot. And, you know, I went through TPI, so I know a little bit about that. But it's just amazing at what people can do now with the technology. And I think some people are going to have a niche, you know, so they might be jam-packed with the lesson schedule because they're attracting that type of student who wants that information and it works well for them. But if you're working with a huge clientele that, you know, you have to be really careful as to how you teach them, then I think you have to be open to that. I will actually ask students, would you like to see a video? Will it be helpful? And, you know, surprisingly, a lot of people say no, just tell me or just put me in the position. So, you know, I'll say I may take a video and I may look at it myself, but a lot of people get sidetracked as to how they look. I still hear that. I heard that 3 times last week. You know, people were commenting on how they looked rather, you know, because they're not used to seeing themselves, and we see it all the time, so we're desensitized. So you have to be real tactful with that. But that's what's so nice about 3D is you're not so much seeing the person. And 3D, you get to see a lot more about the data and what's going on biomechanically. The video is 2D, and it's actually non-concurrent feedback. You don't get the feedback at the same time. I like using a lot of training aids where you see it at the same time, so you know right away whether it's there or not, like a shaft or something that you're not supposed to hit. You know, I do a lot with head covers. I'll fill up my Ping head covers. Visually, I'll make a little gate track for you. So you have to visually go through the gate, so that would work for you. Plus, you also have to not hit the head cover, so you get a feel about how to swing through the gate without hitting it.
Exactly.
So you're seeing it and you're feeling it. And I think everybody has all three learning styles. The LPGA does a great job in the teaching and club professional division on training, you know, training teachers. And we did a lot with VAK and visual, auditory, kinesthetic. And you kind of get an idea on what a person is. You can, you know, maybe look at how they dress, their clothing, how they manage themselves, and you can kind of pick up cues here and there, and all that can do is make you a stronger communicator, which helps the lesson, you know.
Right, exactly. And I agree with that. I just think, you know, you have to sort of assess really what the individual is looking for, and you need to really understand what's going to help them. And I think, as we both agree, I think that a lot of the tools that are available out there right now in the market are great. But you have to sort of put them in context with what you're trying to help the student with. And I just think sometimes, like you said, if somebody's using a specific type of equipment or technology and it's working well for them and they're getting a lot of you know, clients coming in, then by all means, stick with it. You don't want to change or jump ship, so to speak. But I just think that some that are maybe struggling, and there's a lot. The reason why I wanted to ask that was because I've noticed in some of the posts there was a few instructors that had, you know, were sort of thinking about getting out of the profession, that they just were sort of disgruntled. And I think part of it is probably they're not really, like, for instance, you've sort of carved out a niche in your teaching profession that you're dealing with a lot of the juniors, and that's something you enjoy doing, and you've obviously gained some success through it. I think others need to go in with that sort of same game plan, decide what area they want to really focus on and what they're getting results from, and kind of go from there.
I totally agree. There is so much out there now that to be good at, you know, working with like a track man, and then, you know, working with the emotional and, you know, early child development of a 2 to 6 year old. And then, running a Get Golf Ready program. There's so many different assets, the club fitting, the instruction, the programming, that it's like you have to almost be certified in each one. And, I'm learning that I need to really, you know, what I do well at, and I need to stick with that. And I'd love to get much better at working with technology and biomechanics and whatnot. But there's just so much out there, and I just have to be really careful how thin I spread myself. But I think we can help each other out too, Ted, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I agree with that. Now, you led a perfect segue into what my next question was going to be. For those that are out there that are listening that maybe don't know what this program is, explain a little bit about what the Get Ready Golf is.
Oh, definitely. The PGA has a Get Golf Ready session that they've set up. It's like a new golfer program in a can. It just, you know, they have it all set up as far as the syllabus. And we've actually tweaked ours differently. And you really, I think, have to find the way that it works best at your facility. But Cheryl Anderson was a great proponent of the program. She does a lot with it, so she was a good lead for me. And basically, there are 5 lessons at $99 is what they suggest. And they have the whole syllabus set up. You know, the ladies, the men come in, they go through the program. It's a really nice overview of the game. You go from short game to medium game to long game, and then you mix the course stuff in pretty quickly in terminology so people get real comfortable. And then there's a level 2 that they came up. What we ended up doing, which has worked so well here, I'm really pleased with it, our level 1 now is a 3-hour, it's 3 1-hours, I should say, sessions, and it's all snag equipment. So we use the long snag equipment, we use the snag terminology, and it's been so well received by people. They don't want to give the clubs back. They're like, are you serious? We have to go to traditional clubs? And I'm like, well, you know, you can play with it for another week. But they love the snag equipment, and they learn it so much more quickly. And then we go to level 2, which is the regular level 1. It's the 5 hours at $99, and we charge it if they come to the first level, and if then they go into the second, they're at $99. If it's not, it's $120. And then they can go from 2 to 3, which again, if they're in the 1 and 2, they go to 3, it's $99, and if not, it's $120. But it just progresses. We've actually had a request now for level 4, so I'm going to build a level 4 program, and I just can't believe it. It's been a really good program, so the PGA is a great lead for that.
Perfect. And I agree with that. I think that's a great thing. This is something that I've thought about for a long, long time. It seemed for a while, and I'm probably going to date myself a little bit, but it seemed for a while there it was very cumbersome for people to get into the game of golf. It was very, very expensive, and it seemed that it just was not conducive for getting new people involved in the sport. And somewhere back, I guess it was around the 80s, they, you know, prices came down. Clubs obviously opened up their doors a little bit more, and for obvious reasons, you know, you had that recession that came in the later 80s and early 90s. But programs like this, I think, are good because it allows somebody to come in basically from the very start and really learn and understand. And they're doing it in a group. It's not just your standard lessons, but it's a program that's been specifically targeted to get people up and running, if you will, and as you say, Get Ready Golf. Now, you also, I noticed here, I was reading through some of the things that you had. Explain a little bit about the Tee It Forward program. What's that all about?
And, you know, I was going to make a quick comment on the Get Golf Ready and any of the young golf programs like ages 2 to 6. I think it's really important that if a golf professional or a teacher is not comfortable with that type of environment, like, you know, if I was to do a class on biomechanics, I'd definitely want to have somebody come in to help me. But if you're not comfortable, get somebody to help you with that, because that can only strengthen your program. So find a good team to work with. But with the Tee It Forward program that USGA and PGA really stepped up with about 2 years ago, we brought it here to the Landings, and we actually did a 1-month trial, and for 1 month, we had our launch monitor at different facilities. We have four ranges on the island at 6 different courses. And so we just had people working on, you know, just get your drive length tested on your carry distance. And based on the driving distances they recommended, then people went out and we recommended what tees to play from. And from that, we've had a lot of our members move forward. There are still people that, you know, want to play back because of the expectation and the shoulds, and I just can't. Yeah. I can't make people move up, but I can't recommend it enough. I've moved up one, and I can still play back, but I like it more from the forward tee. You know, more forward tee, and it's been really fun. So it's been helpful.
Well, just to add on that, when I was in my 20s, I guess it was probably a male ego thing. You know, you wanted to play from the tips because everybody you watched everybody on TV and. And it just, you know, when you're playing with your friends and that, it was just unheard of to play from the whites, you know, at that age. You had to play all the way back from the champion tees and so forth. And but as you get a little wiser and a little older and mm-hmm. mature, you start to say, you know what, this just doesn't make any sense.
Well, and the guys on TV are hitting the greens from the championship tees. They're hitting the greens with like 7-irons and very high lofted clubs, and most people are hitting in fairway woods and hybrids, and it's really hard. And I do discuss with students. A lot of them want to work on distance, and we discuss that distance depreciates with age, and it's just not something people like to chat about, but it's reality. And I try to do the best to help find some speed sources, and depending on how much time they want to put in, but I think every golfer has the right to have a chance to hit a par 3 and 1, a par 4 and 2, and a par 5 and 3. And, for pace of play, we're all responsible for pace of play. And as pace has increased over the years, I still see people that are taking 5-6 shots to get on the green. And I'm like, gosh, they're playing from the wrong tees, And the tees do not know if you're a male or a female. We know.
No,
so
humans
have made it that issue. And I just can't say how many people have come up going, Nicole, we're so glad you're, writing articles on this. I moved up and I'm having so much more fun. And a great way that that some of our people have been moving up, like some of the guys' groups will be playing from, we have like 6 sets of tees, so they'll play from the second last tees at tournaments. And if they, let's say they bogey, they have to move up to the next set. If they bogey again, they have to move up to the next set. So some of them have found themselves on the way forward tees, like the U.S. Gibbs Gold level 2 tees. And then if they par or birdie, they get to move back again. So they're having a ball with that. But, a lot of them are moving up.
Right. Most of your courses now, years ago, you really were very limited. You had the ladies' tees and you had, the whites as they were referred to. And then you might have your, your champion tees or what have you. But a lot of the courses now, especially when you get into some of the resorts or the bigger clubs and that, they might have 5 or 6 sets of tees.
Yeah, they're definitely coming up with a lot. Yeah.
Exactly. So there's really something there, really for everybody. I mean, obviously, if you're a strong player and you want to, test your abilities, there's nothing wrong with playing a little further back. But I think what happens, Nicole, and this is certainly, I think you'd probably agree with this, if you're not being realistic with your game and you're playing that far back and you're just not, reaching the green, as you say, in 2 or even 3, you're going to get frustrated. You're not going to enjoy it, and I think that's why a lot of people end up getting away from the game. It's too hard.
Yeah, and then they try to work more on distance, and it takes a lot of work. I think, people see golf on TV, and they're watching the best of the best that week, and they're like, well, this is easy, and it really takes a lot of work. And, I think also part of the tee issues, we lose senior men to the game because they won't go play from what are known as the ladies' tees, and the tees are not ladies' tees, per se. They're tees that women happen to use. So I've been really trying hard to kind of get people into the 21st century and just saying, we're playing from the forward tee, the middle tee, because I play from 2 to 3 tees back from where the women normally would play. I play from our club tees, sometimes tournament, sometimes medal at our place. But guys and junior boys are playing from the forward tee. So I think the stereotype on the names of the tees need to be tweaked. So that's my
thought. Yeah, and I think it's just I agree 100%. And I think it's starting to change. I think the generations coming through now are starting to realize that the gender issue is really becoming a mute point. There's still your hardcore diehard that they're gonna, I'm a man and I'm gonna do this. And I see it all the time out in the range. I see them out there and they're just beating ball after ball after ball, and I'm just rolling my eyes and shaking my head. But you can't say anything. And you try to encourage them, as best you can, but they're just not going to do it. And those are the ones really that I don't enjoy working with because they're not receptive to anything.
Mm-hmm.
All they want to do is they just want to know, how can I get it out further and so on and so forth. But
right. Well, and there's some things, I guess you could set up parameters to say, well, we need to, if you have, like TrackMan or 3D, you can say, well, it needs to see at least these numbers for us to create some more distance for you. And, then obviously working on short game and they're like, oh, my short game's fine. And I'll say, well, if you can beat me, we don't have to work on it. But if you can't, then we've got to. So I got to keep my game sharp on my short game for sure, because I definitely want to challenge that, especially like some of the teen guys that come in and they're like, oh, it's pretty good. So I would definitely want to challenge them in there. And one of the things that I've been using in our farm team program, which is a newer golfer program to get them out playing, I'll do something called par stroke scoring, and the LPGA gave me that idea. Gosh, must have been over 10 years ago now. But if you're on a par three, you get three chances to get on the green. And if you're not on, you pick up. You put it on the edge of the green, you get three chances to putt it in. Par four, you get 4 and 4. Par five, 5 and 5. And that technically includes, you know, if you hit an OB or whatnot. So it keeps the game moving. So what I just recently did, I came up with our Get Golf Ready for our Level 2 program. They get a beginner's permit, kind of like a new driver gets a driver's permit. They get a beginner's permit, and it says on the back, you know, I follow the tee it forward, the par stroke scoring, and the PGA it's okay guidelines, you know. It's okay to play golf for fun. So a lot of people don't know about those. So it's all listed. It's on a little laminated card, and they feel like, hey, I'm a golfer now. This is kind of cool.
Right. Yeah, and this is what I'm talking about. This is why I wanted to have you on the program, is because you're doing a lot of neat things that are really encouraging people not only to take up the game, but that are in the game, that gives them a chance to really feel like they're accomplishing something. I think if you try to make it too difficult and too challenging for, especially for the newer golfers, I mean, obviously at the 2 to 6 age, they're not really going to understand a lot quite at that age. But when you start getting up, as you said, to the middle school and beyond, you want to keep them encouraged to playing, because if they're frustrated or intimidated, they're not going to stick around and they're going to leave. And that's what's really happened, I think, over the years. There have been a lot. Now, obviously, there's been a resurgence of younger golfers coming in with the likes of, Tiger and, you know, Annika Sorenstam and some of the other younger players that have come along over the years that have sort of regenerated that process. But, you know, by having these types of programs and making it very accessible, you know, to a variety of ages and so forth, I think is really the way that the industry needs to go. And that was why I wanted to have you on the program. And I wanted to really, you know, have a chance for listeners out there, whether it be other instructors that are in the profession that want to get some, you know, some ideas and things for their own facility, but also for the everyday golfer that wants to say, hey, you know, I want to know, you know, I can't right now get out there and take those 5 lessons, but I'd like to get some insight and maybe what programs are available out there to me. And that's really why I wanted to do this format.
Well, thanks. Thank you.
Now, something I also noticed on the email that you'd sent me earlier, you're talking about a Lindt chocolate golf party. What's this all about?
You know, we had last year I had the Lindt chocolate rep come over. She lives in Atlanta from our area. And I saw this in a Bon Appetit magazine. And I was like, oh, they actually do like RSVP parties, kind of like Pampered Chef. And I was like, that would be really cool to have her come in. So we had her come into our neighborhood and do one for some ladies. And it was really nice. And she did her little chat. And then we taste tested chocolate. We were all happy. So I'm thinking of bringing her back in to do a golf chocolate party. So I want to have like a little clinic, and then we all come in and taste, you know, chocolate, listen to the spiel on Lindt, which is fun, and just have a good time. It gets people there. It's an extra, you know, extra chance to get them out. So I think if I can make it work the right way, I'm looking forward to trying that. And it might be chocolate first and then golf. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you'll make it to the golf with after all that chocolate. You'll have
everybody.
Well, that's
a good point.
You know what I mean? I mean, I know for me, I've got a sort of a sweet tooth, and I just find if I was to do that, I'd have to do the golf first for sure.
I know, but we can't let it melt, Ted.
No, that's true. That's true. and you want to have it while it's fresh too. You don't want it to get too old, because chocolate's great when it's fresh. But
I
also wanted to ask you. I was reading through the email, and you had mentioned that you were running a girls golf program when you were in Knoxville. Are you doing anything like that now, or are you maybe thinking about running something like that, or you just got a lot on your plate right now and it's maybe too soon to go that route?
Well, no, that's a good question. I wanted to try to come here and set one up, but with the program, and as I work at a private club, we're not able to have people just come in and out, so it has to be a guest of the member. So I wasn't able to have that, and that has to be set up with a lot of public access. So I try to have some events at our club. I'm trying to get a girls' golf program started, and we have girls that come in and out, but it hasn't quite picked up to that level. That program I did was a chapter of the LPGA PGA, USGA Girls Golf Program. And right. I think their goal in 2012 was to reach over 10,000 girls. I haven't seen the final number, but it grew from like 1,800 girls, something that Sandy LaBeouf started. And it's amazing. And I cannot wait. In 2 weeks, we are headed back to Kiowa to do the second annual LPGA Girls Golf Academy. And there will be like 60 girls at the academy and 60 girls playing. It's tremendous. The program, there's a program and a chapter here in Savannah, and Barbara Essex does a great job running that. It's under the First Tee umbrella here, so they're coincidental. And I go help with that when I can and provide ideas. And one of the programs I do here is the Georgia Girls Golf Day, and the GSGA has a one day that maybe 7 or 8 areas in Georgia have a girls golf day. So we have like one afternoon in October we're going to do hopefully around 80 to 90 girls here for 4 hours. And our members have been great. Last year they took on a lot of volunteer. It was wonderful. They helped get some girls out on the course for the first time in their carts. They've never been out on the course. And we had goodie bag stuffers, and we had we had them make visors before the class. We had them all kinds of stuff. So I'm helping out with that when I can. But I do miss my girls program in Knoxville and our volunteer base and our monthly programs. They were just so fun.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it's great. Just very quickly to any of the viewers that may have tuned in a little bit later, didn't catch the beginning of the program, I'm here with my special guest, Nicole Weller from the Lannings Club in Savannah, Georgia. She's the head teaching professional there, and we've just been talking a little bit about junior programs and golf in general. And I just wanted to read a couple of things. You have on your website, Nicole, you have what people are saying about Nicole. And I found some of them very, very interesting. Obviously, some of the Landings members and others have you've put up some comments and things that they've based on their experiences with you. And one of them I had to read, I thought was quite interesting. And obviously, I'm assuming this is coming from one of the grandparents. It says, "Our grandchildren had a wonderful time. Thank you for making your holiday vacation at the Landings extra special. You really do a wonderful job with the kids. Believe me, a very special talent." Both commented on how much they like Miss Nicole and how nice she is and how smart she is. The kudos just keep coming. What can I say without over effusing, but thank you. We are so lucky to have you and your husband. Our most sincere thanks. And, of course, a Landings member doesn't give the names in that. But it just really is a testament to the type of work that you and Ty are doing out there at the Landings Club. And I just really hope that any of the other teaching professionals that maybe have tuned in or even any of the golfers that might be listening into the program tonight, just understand that that's really what it's all about. That's why we get in this profession, is to help others and to start the interest going at a very early age. And you've obviously done a wonderful job, because there's a whole, I've got 2 pages of nice comments like that I could read.
Well, thank you so much. It's I'm so glad that people are enjoying, and I constantly try to find new ways, and you know, we're all sharing with each other on social media ways to help each other out, and it's just nice to see the excitement, and I feel like we're just one part of one big fraternity / sorority in the golf field, and it's really nice.
Yeah, and this is what I've said to some of the others, and just to, you know, to sort of emphasize what the premise of this program is I wanted to really do something. And it wasn't just about hearing myself talk. It was really about bringing others together that are in this profession. And again, obviously, primarily, I want to focus on the teaching professionals. But I wanted to put together a forum, if you will, of those in the golf industry. And that includes certainly equipment managers and those that have products and books and things like that. But really bring it together, a place that people can tune in, whether they come live or not, but a place for them to go and get a perspective from not just one or two teachers. I mean, we all have our own websites and blogs and you know, different social media and that's great. But one of the things that I mentioned to Chuck, the gentleman that's in Tallahassee this morning, is when I was back home, and in case you weren't aware of it, I'm originally from Canada. I moved down here to Panama City Beach probably about 7 or 8 years ago, mm-hmm. and really to pursue this a little bit more. In Canada, obviously, we have limited seasons, so it's a little bit difficult to do this type of thing. And I've always, liked Florida and wanted to come back down here. And, you know, the parents did the snowbird thing for years, so that's kind of why I started here. But something that I did back home, not golf-related, but in a different industry, and I think this is really where I'm going with this program, is I was part of an organization that worked out of a specific region. It was Hamilton-Wentworth. And the region, we used to do a lot of different trade shows and that sort of thing. And quite often, a lot of the local businesses would go to these trade shows, and they would sort of do their own thing. And they never really promoted the region very well. In fact, the region itself didn't really do a good job. So I approached one of the senior members on the board, and I said, look, why don't we do this? Why don't we create a network of businesses in this region? You help finance some of it, not the entire cost, but just some of it, and let's promote the region in general with all of these wonderful and great things to do in the region. And, I mean, it was amazing when we did these different programs and shows how much more exposure the region itself got because we worked together as a team. And that's really what I want to try and focus on with this program is I want to bring teaching professionals and other golf professionals into this forum and get just not just your perspective, not just my perspective, but a myriad of information coming through that people can tune into, again, either live or recorded, and just be able to get that information and be able to find out how they can get in touch with the people. I mean, obviously, we want to promote the individuals as well, but I think create a network of professionals and work as a team, if you will, because we're all really trying to do the same thing, and that is to grow the game of golf. We obviously want to grow our own individual businesses, but at the same time, I think there's a better avenue to do it than just trying to all sort of scramble and do our own thing all the time.
No, I agree. I think that is huge. We've all got to come together and figure out what our areas are and then help each other out. I am so happy to refer people who do things better than I do in certain areas, and that makes us better teachers when we can help each other out. So I'm looking forward to, you know, tuning into some of your future episodes, too, to where I can learn some ideas about, you know, my different areas I need to work on. So this is a great idea, Ted.
Well, exactly, and that's exactly what the premise of this program is all about, is it's not just for the average weekend golfer to listen to. I mean, obviously, we want to draw them in, but I want the other teaching professionals to tune in because, like you say, you know, I might have an idea that you haven't thought of, or I might have a technique or something, and vice versa, and so on and so forth, you know, with the rest of them that are going to be coming on in the program, and I just think it's a great way. And you can certainly communicate through Facebook and things like that, but I just think that this gives a better opportunity for people to really talk about it, discuss it further, showcase what it is that they're doing at their facility, much like you've done this evening so far, and really get that word out there a little more effective than having to, you know, go back and forth on Twitter and Facebook and all these other things. I mean, they're great tools to have, but I think sometimes that interaction on a format like this just makes it more conducive to getting the word out.
No, that's great, and I thank you for having that opportunity. I think this is going to be a really, really big thing.
Well, and something, too, and I'm going to throw this out there to you, Nicole. Obviously, I would love to have you back anytime that you want to come back. But I thought, too, what I would really like to do, and I'm sort of leading into this final sort of segment on women in golf, is I would love to have yourself and maybe a few other ladies out there that are in the teaching professional come on at the same time and just create a forum where we can discuss about what we can do to help bring more women into golf. And obviously I'm referring to the girls as well, not just the women in general. But so do you think that enough, a question I want to ask you first off is, do you think enough has been done to encourage women to take up golf?
I think it is getting a lot better, especially with connecting with her, a publication that the PGA has put out. I think it's coming around a lot better, and people are more understanding of maybe, you know, what does it take to maybe reach out to some women in different teaching styles and them, you know, business women who are working and what their needs are going to be versus a mom.
Right.
So I think it's getting better. It's definitely on the up and up.
Definitely room for some improvement, but definitely on the right track. You know, the reason why I asked that is I'm a big proponent of women in golf. I've believed it, you know, since I was, again, going back to that phrase, knee high in a grasshopper. I just, you know, and this goes back to having a lot of respect for my mother growing up. She golfed, of course, and you know, she's on in years now, so she doesn't play anymore, but you know, she always loved the game, and it was not, obviously in her day, it wasn't accessible, as it is today. I mean, a lot of the courses, obviously, you know, either had a lot of restrictions or just made it so darn difficult for women to get out there. So I'm glad to see that. And I want to be somebody in the business that really helps. I mean, there's a lot of people out there, and I'm certainly not the only one, and I'm not going to be necessarily the best, but I really want to be able to help bring more women into the game of golf, because I just think that they add a lot of style, and I'll be honest, I enjoy watching the LPGA more than I do the PGA. And it's, you know, I mean, it's great to watch the guys, but I just think that the women just bring a whole different a set of skills, and you know, most of them, obviously, they're not hitting as long as I mean, there have been a few over the years that have can belt it out a mile, but their short games are phenomenal, I think, even compared to some of the men on tour.
Oh, I agree. And, you know, we're so fortunate. I'm truly thankful to the Landings Club and the members to be able to work here with Ty. And the facility here is so welcoming for the ladies. So I guess I've been used to the last 9 years seeing men and women out there in droves just playing golf, loving golf. We have some members where, you know, the wife is the main golf membership holder. And here it's thriving. It is so women-friendly down here. We have three out of the four golf shops have clothing, and it's just outfitted so much for women. And I remember in other golf shops I've seen there might be a little corner where you have some women's clothes, and you know, it's hard to do a lot of shopping for the sizes and the colors and the styles, but it's definitely coming along. And the game itself is gender unbiased. The tee doesn't know, the golf ball doesn't know, the club doesn't know who's swinging it. You know, it's you know, just the expectation and the tradition and whatnot. So, but it's definitely coming along. And you know, for me growing up in the New England area, at the time I did, there was rarely any time that, you know, I didn't feel like I was part of the game, other than if we went to a couple places and as a female I couldn't go in, and so I had to wait for my dad in the car or whatnot. But, you know, I just go out and play. Just go out and play the game, and love to see all golfers out there.
Exactly. And I'm the same way. I think that, you know, I think it should be accessible to everybody. And I know it's, as you say, it's making great headways in that. What are your thoughts, Nicole, on the LPGA as far as, and I'll be a little bit more specific, and again, I'm not trying to throw you under the bus or anything like that, but why do you think that so many of the European and Asian players on the LPGA are just dominating?
I think they have an incredible work ethic. You know, for me being raised European, I was raised under, I felt like a different work ethic than some of my friends. I was, you know, I was always, I don't know, it's hard to say how my parents raised me, but it was pretty strict, and there were a lot of expectations. But I think the work ethic's different. I know the TNCP, our Teaching and Club Professional Division, has been starting education programs over there now, and we constantly see pictures of, you know, 10, 15 new teachers. They just love it. They love being out there learning, and you know, there's definitely an interest overseas. I think the style is different. You know, I have worked with with some Asian students, and they want to do things the right way, as a lot of us do, and they are very dedicated to just standing there, and they could go through a basket of 300 balls, you know, no problem, if that's what's required to do. So, they put the work ethic in, and when I played in college, you know, we were playing out there in threesomes. Sometimes, you know, two out of three were non-American, and, you know, for a person to give up living in their country, learn a different language, move overseas, I mean, that's a lot, and I don't think Americans do that as much as Europeans or Asians leave to come over here. Maybe that's because, I don't know, you know, what's available, but it's just really, really interesting to see that, and they've definitely had a lot more tournaments starting up over there, and the interest of the game is just real popular in Asia. It's really, really, it's interesting to see. Yeah. I know Snag is doing a lot of cool things in China, too.
Right. Yeah, and that's definitely a fast-growing market. I mean, a lot of the – in fact, I think I was reading something not too long ago on course development. Obviously, I won't say it's come to a screeching halt, but it certainly came down because of the recession here in the U.S. And obviously, but I know over in areas like China and certainly still parts of Europe – that there's a lot of development, course development. It's just, it's open season, if you will. So everybody from Nicholas to, you know, Arnold Palmer and a lot of the others that are out there that are in the development and design area of golf are out there putting courses up. And I don't blame them. I mean, they have to keep their businesses going and things like that. And I think it's great to get a new market. I think I had in one of the early programs, Nicole, and again, I just want to kind of get your thought on this if you wish to comment. But one of the things that I've noticed is there seems to be more, and this is maybe why there's a difference. There seems to be more of a focus here on branding. And what I mean by that is some of the players here in the U.S. tend to, and I've noticed it particularly, and again, I mentioned this in one of the first episode, I think it was, that they tend to be more focused on not so much the game, and that doesn't mean they're not working hard and they're not playing golf, but it's more image.
Mm-hmm.
They're more image conscious, and I'm sure you've witnessed that yourself. And I think that maybe some of the European players and the Asian players particularly are not so interested on who I am and what I'm about. I'm here to play golf. I'm here to do well. And then the accolades sort of come later. And the reason why I say that, if you look back in history in golf with, and I'm using primarily the men's tour, but Nicholas and Palmer and Trevino and all that, they seem to be more focused on playing the game. And then obviously their success in that came out as a result of it. And I just seem to find that some of the younger players, and maybe it's a generational thing, I'm not sure, seem to be more focused about creating a brand around themselves before they've really accomplished anything. And I just wonder if that's maybe part of the problem. Is they're not, I mean, again, I'm not saying they're not working hard, but maybe they're not working as hard as maybe some of these other players are that are coming from overseas because of that. Do you agree with that or
see any of that as being... That's a good question. I don't know. Maybe it's also the age of sports agents and what's important to get ahead and those types of things. IMG or whatnot and how to be a professional. Maybe people are getting caught up in that a little bit. But you definitely see a lot of the branding on the shirts. And I think you see it with everyone. But I don't know. That's a good question.
Well, it just seems to me, and again, I think it's probably more of a generational thing. I think the younger generation are more about, getting their name out there and that. And there's a number of them that I can think of, and I'm not going to say them because I'm not here to put anyone down in that. But I've just noticed that they really haven't sort of made headways on any of the tours, whether it be the LPGA or the PGA, and yet their names are well out there. But yet you see some of these young ladies that are coming on the LPGA, particularly from Asia and different areas like that in Europe, and they're just dominating. I mean, they're just, tournament after tournament. They're in the hunt every single week.
Mm-hmm. They're definitely a lot of good players. Yeah.
Oh, and obviously, I mean, there seems that especially on the LPGA, it seems to have really tipped in that way for the last several years. And I really, the reason why I'm saying that is I really want to start seeing it. That here in the U.S. that the girls really step up, not just on the professional level, but even at the junior levels, really get up there and say, hey, wait a minute, we want to start getting out there and winning tournaments and playing better and that, and worry less about creating an image around themselves first.
I understand. There's some girls that are working really hard, and parents that are definitely wanting, their children to have a good life and get ahead. But I've seen a lot of parents also come up too and say, well, my daughter plays a little bit of golf. I want her to try out for a scholarship. And I think some parents don't know or families don't understand what it takes to get there. There's a lot of hard work. And that's why I think it's important to, sit down with the families and say, do you know what it's going to take to get there? What kind of time do you want to put in? Is the junior more interested in hanging out with friends on Friday, Saturday night? Or, there might be a time where you have to be working out at the range and whatnot. So, from what I've heard on the practice side, they're different from based on I think the cultures, but there's a lot of work that goes into it, and then the scholarships are, people saying a lot of women's scholarships go unused, and I think that's changed. But there's hard work that goes into getting those, and it takes time, it takes work.
Right, exactly. Well, it looks like we've got somebody here that wants to come in and say hello, so let's take a call.
Okay.
Welcome to Golf Talk Live. You're on with Ted and Nicole.
Hey, how are you?
Hello.
I'm doing well. Who do we have the pleasure of speaking with?
Joel Zuckerman, big fan of Nicole Weller, one of my favorite pros of all time.
Long time no see.
I just wanted to call and say a quick hello and tell you that, you know, Nicole has such a wonderful reputation. People don't like her. They love her here in Savannah, Georgia.
Yes. I can believe that, Joel.
She is all that. She is everything you want in a pro and more.
Thanks, Joel.
Well, Joel, I'd like you to hold on for just a second because I have a question I want to ask you. Now, you have mentioned to me, now obviously I told Nicole earlier that that we had not actually spoken but communicated, and I'm probably going to have you on the show at a later point to talk a little bit more about your book, but I understand from reading in the emails and so forth that Nicole was featured in your book.
Yes, and I do not want to take away from Nicole's time, but I will tell you briefly. I've just published the only book ever written in praise of the club professional. I chose 30 pros from around the country, which is 0.1% of the members of the PGA of America. And I thought Nicole merited inclusion, even though she is far younger than the other 29, or at least 26 or 7 of the other 30
right.
pros. They're all old enough to be her uncle, if not her father. And she's a star. I'm going to say she's a star in the making, but she's actually a star in her own right. And I didn't realize she was still on the air. I'm just calling on my cell phone, so I do not want to infringe on her time. So.
Not a problem.
Great to have
you
on. This has been great. We're having a good time chatting. How's the signing going?
Well, the signing
went well. Yeah, Nicole and I were doing a book signing with the new book. Mm-hmm. She had to cut out to come talk to you, but it all worked out very well. And
good.
I'm thrilled to have her in the book, and I'm sure many of your listeners would be interested in the book also, or at least that's what I would hope.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I apologize for stealing her away for this time, but I know that she'll be right back at it in the days and weeks ahead to sign some more. And
we've got another signing tomorrow. It's coming up again soon.
Yeah. I figured she'd have more coming, but no, I just wanted you to mention that because I noticed that you know, in the emails and you know, going back and forth that. That Nicole was one of the pros in your book, and we certainly want to hear more about it when you come on the show yourself. We can talk about that and obviously some other things. But no, it's been a pleasure having Nicole on this evening, and certainly learned a lot. And I, as I mentioned her at the beginning of the program, I looked through her website and so forth, and just found her to be equally as charming and whatnot as a guest on the program. And I'm hoping she's going to come back many, many more times. But, Joel, I appreciate you calling in, and I look forward to talking to you in a little while.
No problem. Just tell your listeners, or maybe I'll tell them, if they want this unusual new book for Father's Day, go to prosprosbook.com.
Okay. We'll
Simple
do.
Enough.
Thank you.
P-R-O-S.
Thank
you. P-R-O-S book. Hey, thank you very much, and Nicole, we'll see you tomorrow.
All right, we'll see you tomorrow. Thanks, Joel. Bye.
All right, thanks. Bye.
All right. Thanks, Joel, for calling in. Okay, Nicole, we're getting close to the end of our time.
Okay.
But is there anything that you would like to, obviously the book was a good one to start, but is there anything that you want to really let the listeners know that's coming up in the next few weeks or months that you're going to be working on that you want them to know about, or what some exciting things happening at the Landings Club?
We're really excited to be starting a PGA Junior League in the Savannah area. So we are going to be one of four clubs that are going to be hosting that, putting a team together. So I definitely encourage, people in their areas to be looking at a PGA Junior League. So we didn't do it last year, but are starting in this year. And it's really going to be a lot of fun. Our first match is this Saturday. I think that's a great way to grow the game. We also have like a U.S. Kids Junior Tour starting in the area, U.S. Kids Golf Tour, so that's going to be exciting as well and get more kids out there. But, as we hit the summer months, just getting the children out there with families, with the pros, with grandparents, just to expose them to the game. The book that I have, sticktosports.com, is a great way for programs to get the books out and as far as a syllabus and ideas and games with the kids. So there are a lot of ways to get engaged with the juniors out there on the course. And on my website, I have a under my Stick to Sports page where my book is. I have a list of junior links with a lot of resources, suggestions on ideas where they could go for training aids or programs or equipment or, you know, whatever they need for youth golf. So I hope that they'll be able to take advantage
right.
of that. And feel free to call or email me with questions. So I'm always happy to help.
Okay, and they can get that at NicoleWeller.com?
They can. If they wanted to email me about some programs and ideas, best way to reach me is at the Landings Club. It's Nicole.Weller@landingsclub.com. And my number is 912-695-5211. If they're interested in about the book, I do wholesale pricing for pros, for programs. I have a bonus program, I have a referral program. The best way to reach me for my book, it would be to email me at Nicole@WellerSportsVentures.com.
Okay. Well, that's terrific. Well, Nicole, I want to thank you again for coming on the program. We've just got a couple of more minutes here, and I just have one or two announcements that I'm going to make. But I appreciate greatly. I thoroughly enjoyed having you on. You've been a wonderful guest. And if you want to learn more a little bit about Nicole, those of you that are listening in now and later, visit her website, NicoleWeller.com, or certainly look for her on Facebook and probably just about every social media site out there, Twitter. I know you're on Twitter as well. And check out her book, Sticks to Forts, Let's Play Golf. You can get that on her website as well. You can get some information about that. And if you need to see Nicole in person and maybe get some help with your little one, you can visit her at the Landings Club in Savannah, Georgia.
Well, thank you, and I want to thank family and members who have been listening and also friends for support, but any way I can help anyone, I'm so happy to. So thanks, Ted, very, very much.
You're very welcome, and as I said, Nicole, you have an open invitation to come back anytime, and we'll have lots more to talk about, but I just wanted to give you this opportunity to come out and tell a little bit about what it is that you do, and I knew that you'd be excited about talking about it, and it's been a pleasure having you on the program, and I look forward to having you be involved in the future, and... Nicole, thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll see if I can bring my PGA husband.
Okay. Well, that's right. Next time we'll bring Ty on. Now, I have one final question for you.
Okay.
And this is one that, and then I'll let you answer, and we'll end it there, and Ty will have to come on.
Okay.
You've obviously beaten him. I know you have. I just can tell. You've beaten him on the golf course.
And the question is?
When did that happen? How long ago did that
happen?
Oh,
my gosh.
The first
time. Know, our favorite line, the first time, I can't remember, but our favorite line when people ask us who wins is we always say it's the person with the lowest score that day. So it really varies. We go back and forth. He's been a great, a great supporter on and off the course. He's my best friend and great, mm-hmm. just great guy. So, yeah, it just depends who's playing better that day, Ted.
Well, that's good. Well, listen, we certainly would love to have him on the program as well in the future. And again, I can't emphasize enough, Nicole, how much I appreciate you coming on. I thoroughly enjoy. I couldn't think of a better person to have as my first guest here on Golf Talk Live.
Well, thank you so much. That's very nice to hear. Thanks so much, Ted.
No problem. You take care and have a great rest of your evening. And thank you for giving me this time.
My pleasure. Take care. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. Okay, there you have it. That was my special guest, Nicole Weller, from the Landings Club in Savannah, Georgia. She's the head teaching professional there, along with her husband, Ty, as you've just heard. And we're certainly glad to have had her here on the program, and I hope that she will come back. Just to let you know, some of the future guests that are going to be coming up, Mr. Barry Goldstein is going to be coming up in the weeks to come. I've mentioned that the last few times. Don't have a confirmed date as of yet. We're just still checking with Barry's schedule. And, of course, his lovely daughter, Carly Ray, who didn't get a chance to mention to Nicole, but if she's listening or tunes into this a little bit later and hears this, Carly Ray is just graduated from high school, and she's going to be heading to LSU to play some golf for their team. And this young lady has won upwards of about 100 tournaments so far in her junior career. And that, to me, is just an amazing, amazing feat for somebody at her age to have that under her belt. So I'm looking forward to Barry and Carly Ray Goldstein coming on the program in the weeks to come. Also, another gentleman that I spoke to today that wants to come on, he's top-notch club maker, and he's going to come on and tell us how we can get some better sticks and just play the game better. And that's Mr. Chuck Lloyd out of Tallahassee, Florida. So he's going to be joining the program. Also, JT White's going to be coming on. And at some point, we're still working on the dates. Joel, who called in a little earlier in the program, in the program and spoke with Nicole and I, he's going to be coming in and talking about his new book as well. And I'll let him tell you a little bit more about that when he comes on in the upcoming weeks. So I just want to thank you all for tuning in, those that you tune in live, and thank you, Joel, again for calling in. And I hope that you enjoyed the segment. I certainly enjoyed bringing Nicole to all of you. And just remember, if you're a club professional or if you're in the golf industry in general and you're interested in being on Golf Talk Live as a guest, just email me at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. That email address again is ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. Or you can reach me on, I'm on Facebook under Ted, and my last name is spelled Odorico, and it's O-D-O-R-I-C-O. You can look me up on Facebook. And we also have a Golf Talk Live Facebook page up now, and a few of you have already gone and liked that. I would certainly appreciate, if you haven't done so, that you visit the page and throw a few likes our way. Hope you will spread the word around about this program. We want to bring some more exciting guests. Again, one last time, I want to thank Nicole Weller for being a guest on the program. Again, she's a head teaching professional at the Landings Club in Savannah, Georgia. And to all of those of her family and friends that were tuning in and listening, I hope you enjoyed the program. I know that you get the pleasure of having Nicole around all the time, and I had her for, well, a little over an hour, and I certainly enjoyed the discussion that we had this evening. So one last thing, remember to tune into Golf Talk Live every Thursday night at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time, where you'll get to learn a little bit more about the guests that we have on and a little bit more about golf. Thank you for tuning in. God bless and have a great evening.